Dear friends, welcome back. I've been very much looking forward to gathering with you tonight. Behold how good and lovely it is when families live together in unity, says Psalm 133. And these words popped into my mind as I began preparing this reflection. Behold how good and lovely it is when there is a family, a community to belong to, a community whose life and commitments we share. So it's good to be with you again. This first service back in February always feels like an opportunity to set our faces collectively towards the new year and to remind ourselves of our essential calling. A number of themes I've been pondering over this January seem to speak to this opportunity as well, as does Australian poet Lisa Jacobson's poem that we just heard, There Are Stones That Sing. So I thought I'd have a go at weaving all those threads together in tonight's reflection. What does it mean to practice Christian faith and to be church in our time and place? That's one of the questions I've been holding. As Lisa Jacobson points out in her poem, the churches are almost empty or sold, as if they've reached their tipping point and from the pulpits God slid out. That's not universally true, of course. There remain pockets of what look like ecclesial success, vitality. But we know that for many people and for our culture as a whole, the church is little more than a fading relic of a bygone age. All that fanciful gold leaf on heaven's floor incinerated by our telescopes as bits of tattered God fall down. We live, writes philosopher Charles Taylor, in a secular age, and our society has undergone a shift from a time when it was virtually impossible not to believe in God to one where, for many, faith never even seems an eligible possibility. In this context, as he says, even the staunchest believer may find it difficult to sustain their faith. I feel that for myself at times. I'm sure you have your moments too. So what are we doing here? What's the point of us? Particularly, and this brings me to the second theme I've been pondering, how do we justify the time and energy committed to being here when the world's needs are so urgent? Sometimes I think of the amount of time I spend preparing the weekly reflection, and I wonder, is this the best use of my energy? Is this what life asks of me? It seems a painful irony, for example, that tonight's readings and songs are also joyfully waterlogged. We've sung of the river of God that sets our feet a-dancing, heard the promise of living water that never runs dry, spoken of pools of silence and refreshing, all while the rivers of our land are filled with dead and dying fish, whole systems drying out, water apparently corruptly bought and sold, the land and its peoples despairing. Of what use is waxing lyrical over this metaphorical river of God to the Murray-Darling Basin and the Menindi Lakes? Is our music, our liturgy, our prayer just one more layer of fanciful gold leaf? A pitiful attempt to gild reality and ultimately futile? Well, maybe. And yet, and this brings me to the third theme of my January. As you can see, I've been having a very restful time. There remains in me the stubborn faith. And I think maybe it's more than faith. Maybe it's a knowing. That despite everything, there is something we're called to remain true to. Something we're asked to make visible. And that this something really is critical for the life of the world. Jacobson writes, "I've heard that arme, soul in French, is the name of a wooden chip, very exposed and vulnerable, that violin makers insert into the bodies of their instruments to further enhance the sound. So maybe that's where God lives now." Actually, I would say that's where God has always lived. Exposed and vulnerable to what we make of God. Always on the brink of being pushed out of our busy lives or falsified by self-serving religion. This is a God able to be encountered only as we ourselves enter that same state of exposure and vulnerability, that tender, undefended, in-between space of listening, longing, resonating in response, like the arm, the soul of the violin. That's where God lives. And I believe that above all else, the vocation of our community is to know this place, this tender, listening, undefended place, to live from it, and so open it as a place of encounter for others. We see how this works in Jesus' meeting with the Samaritan woman. He's intrigued her with a story about water springing up from within, the possibility of a qualitatively different kind of sustenance for life than she can draw for herself. And although she's still a little confused about exactly what it means, she wants what's on offer. "Sir, give me this water, so that I may never be thirsty or have to keep coming here to draw." Yet the condition of her receiving is her preparedness to be vulnerable, to expose the tender truth of her life. She asks for water and Jesus says, "Go call your husband and come back." It's quite a non sequitur. No, I won't say that. It'll distract you. But she doesn't blink, and there's no hint of dissembling. "I have no husband." And we learn the backstory. And with this painful, undefended honesty, she shows herself capable of receiving the gift he can give, which is the inflowing, the realizing of God's life in hers. And she becomes, moreover, someone who can bear news of this possibility, this life, to others. John concludes the story by saying that many believed in Jesus because of the woman's testimony, and that many others came to know it firsthand. "No longer because of what you said, we believe," the townsfolk tell her, "for now we've heard for ourselves, and we know that this truly is the Saviour of the world." So this metaphor of living water, this metaphor of inflow, what exactly are we talking about? And why does it matter? I think it's to do with being connected to the deep source, the wellspring of life itself. It's the possibility of being tapped into a reality that isn't just self-generated or self-contained. And it matters because the more we tap into this, the less we need to focus on defending or asserting our private, separate selves. We know ourselves part of the whole, belonging to a larger life. It frees us up from self-concern, from anxiety. It makes us available for what life wants from us. Before you tell your life what you intend to do with it, Parker Palmer writes, you'd better listen for what your life wants to do with you. It's that idea. And this felt sense of connection, this openness to life's flow, helps us trust in the ultimate goodness of things, even when they're hard or overwhelming, or when despair threatens. Because the more fully we allow this connection, give ourselves to it, let ourselves be sourced in it, the more we experience its essential nature as love. And the more love just pours out of us. So how do we gain access? Well, entering this flow of divine love, becoming connected at this level, isn't something you gain, Jesus says, simply by participating in religious forms, worshipping God on the mountain of Samaria or the temple in Jerusalem. And the churches too, remember, have reached their tipping point. Maybe once we had the illusion God was contained inside our structures, legitimating the status quo and happy to be painted gold. But the hour is coming and is now here, Jesus says, when the true worshippers will worship God in spirit and truth. Spirit and truth. The exposed and vulnerable space of authentic encounter. And this is why we gather. It's the point of us. I know we're at different places with this. Some of you might have a live sense of what I just spoke about, of connectedness to the current, an awareness, probably not continuous, of a qualitatively different energy indwelling you, of love enabling and flowing through you. Others might feel on the outside of this, somehow missing out, yearning, but still parched, disconnected. And most of us, I guess, will have experiences of both. But however it is for you at the moment, I believe this is the possibility for life we're called to know for ourselves and open as a possibility for others. This is what our worship, our meditation, our prayer is about. It's what our gatherings at other times, Lakaiam and Men's Circle, spiritual practice and theology reading groups seek to enable. The needs of our world are indeed urgent. The cry of the earth is clamorous. But our responses need to be sourced in the wellspring of divine love, the river of God that sustains and waters all life. Otherwise, as Thomas Merton said, even in our desire to do good, we communicate only the contagion of our own anxiety, obsessions, and ambitions. If you ask a priest where God is, Jacobson says, he'll point up. If you ask blackfellas, they'll point down to stones that sing and rivers vibrating underground. Jesus too recognised the current of God flowing beneath and through all that is, vibrating with life, singing love. As we regather in community, we commit ourselves anew to listening, longing, and resonating in response, that we too may become conduits of this living water and drink for a thirsting world.